This episode of The Edge is brought to you by Audible.com, offering more than 180,000 titles for smartphone, tablet, and desktop. To get a free audiobook of your choice and help Trek.fm at the same time, visit audibletrial.com/trekfm. And also by Enterprise in Space, an international program of the nonprofit National Space Society. Find out how you can help science and education and become a virtual crew member aboard the NSS Enterprise Orbiter by visiting enterpriseinspace.org. And if you want to join the conversation and share your thoughts on this episode, join the Babel Conference, our listeners group on Facebook. Just type B-A-B-E-L into the Facebook search field. We look forward to seeing you there.
You're listening to Trek FM.
What have you done out there on the edge of Federation space?
Welcome, listeners, to another episode of The Edge, Trek FM's dedicated podcast to Star Trek Discovery. I am your co-host, Brandi Giacola, and joining me today is also the wonderful, the fabulous, the ever-effervescent Liam Smart. Liam, how the heck are you?
I am good. I'm apparently effervescent, although I thought you said Evan Evagora then, and I'm like, I would be him too.
And who wouldn't?
No, I mean, let's face
it. I would be him.
Look at him.
Yeah.
Here we go again.
Sorry. 10 seconds into the podcast and there
we are. And we're screwed. How are you, Brandi?
I am extremely tired, but otherwise fine.
Guess what I bought yesterday?
What did you buy yesterday?
The Last of Us Part 2.
Oh, you suck.
No, I don't. Well, I do, but I don't.
You don't. Yeah, I'm just going to have to avoid spoilers because, to be honest, I haven't finished part one.
Yes, I know, and it triggers me because it's pretty much one of the only games I've finished because I have no care for games most of the time.
Yeah, well, it was one of those things where I got to an area that I couldn't get past no matter what I tried, and 2 hours later, I was done.
Yeah. So I'm excited to play it.
Just done. And I have decided I'm going to go back to the first part and start over because there's no way I'm going to remember what I was doing. I mean, I can remember where I was, but not what I was supposed to be doing.
I'm going to ask you one question to gauge where you are. Did you get up to giraffe?
What?
I take that as a no.
I'm going to say no.
It's my favorite part of The Last of Us Part 1.
The one thing I remember is it was this area that had like a lot of old sort of southern charm homes, like with wrought iron fences around them, etc. And we'd been going through the rooftops and now we couldn't do that anymore. And we had to get through this area and into this house.
Oh, yeah.
And I couldn't even make it past the courtyard, no matter which direction I went, no matter how I tried. I just was not good enough to get the enemies out of the way. Kept dying over and over.
I think I remember that, actually.
Over and over. And it seems like all video games are like that now, that you're doing really fine and you get to this sort of midway point, and now what you thought was a doable thing is now 10 times as hard. Welcome to reality. So, yeah, it's happened in many games.
Happens in real life,
that I
too.
Have played. That, too.
Yes.
It's like someone just changed the curve and didn't inform anybody.
Mm-hmm.
Someday.
Yeah, so we're not the only ones here, are we, Brandi?
We're not. There's a third.
Where is he, though?
I don't know.
Oh.
He's not in the meeting.
Oh. Nick, where are you?
Nick.
Oh.
I can't whistle, or I'd whistle for him. That sounds like calling for a dog, though. That wouldn't be good. yeah, you're so much better at it than I am.
Hi there, listeners. Nick here. Just a heads up that you won't actually be hearing from me for a little while. As I mentioned before, I'm a graduate researcher in the very latter stages of my PhD. And we're talking like less than a month to go latter stages right now. So because of that, I've decided to recuse myself from podcast recording for the next month. And I won't be part of the next couple of episodes. By the time you hear this, I will be less than 2 weeks away from submitting my final thesis, the culmination of 4 years of work. After submitting, it's then a long process of review before I'm finally conferred with my doctorate. The whole process can take several months, but once I've submitted, I'll have the time to return to podcasting. I look forward to recording with Brandy and Liam again in a few weeks' time, and I'm happy to leave things in their more than capable hands for the next two episodes. And know that anything they do or any direction they go in terms of us podcasting together, they have my full 100% support. See you all on the other side, and thanks for understanding.
Nick isn't with us today because he's doing his PhD.
And that is a very important and labor-intensive thing.
Yes. So, very best of luck, dear Nicholas.
Yes. We miss you.
Yes, we do.
I guess we should, just screw around then. While the cat's away, the mice will play, right?
Oh, yeah. I like playing. I'm not the serious one.
I can be.
I can try, but no, probably not.
Don't.
No.
You'll hurt yourself. I don't want that.
It'll strain me.
So, is this the place where we talk about the thing?
I feel like we should talk about the thing.
Let's talk about the thing.
And what thing is that, Brandy Jackala? Or should I say Vedic Jackala?
Maybe, yes. I rather see myself as a Kai Opaka, really. But
yeah, I'm a Kai Win.
Yeah, see, there we go. We're yin and yang.
What if it was Kai Descartes? That would be an interesting mix. Like Descartes when he turned into a Bajoran and then kissed Kai Win. Oh, okay. Moving on.
So, we have some news. It may be sad to some of you, but Liam and Nick and I are going to be ending our run here on The Edge.
Our 14-episode run.
Hey, you multiply that by two, and that's like 28 weeks, man. That's over half a year.
True, we've been dealing with this since November.
Yeah. So, and we are excited to announce that we will be doing a new podcast over at the We Made Treks Network that will be about Deep Space Nine, which we have named, Liam,
The Vedic Assembly.
Yay! So, because of all, let me try that again in a sentence that actually makes sense. Of all of the Trek series that I have covered in podcasting, Deep Space Nine is one of those that I haven't really had the chance to talk about as much, if at all. So, I mean, there's been a couple of episodes of the Unready Room that we have had Deep Space Nine episodes, but that's been the only time I've ever really had the chance to talk about it. So I'm so excited to be moving on with you guys.
I know.
Doing something new.
That was the most important thing to me when deciding to leave the network, is that I wanted to continue with Brandy and Nick because we just have way too much fun together. Some of the things I edit out, you would not believe. Which you might believe.
Some people would believe them.
Some people would. You might get to find them, though, potentially. I haven't quite decided that yet. So, I'm not sure by the time that this particular episode airs that we'll have our first one out. We are doing a couple more episodes of The Edge, though, this one included. Yes. So if you do feel like following us over on to the Deep Space Nine podcast over on We Matrix, please do. Anyway, shall we get into what we're talking about?
I think we absolutely should. And I am excited to do this episode because we are talking about my favorite Discovery character, none other than Sylvia Tilly.
Yes.
Yay! If you've heard me before on Live from the Edge or heard any of the panels that we did at FanX in Salt Lake City last year, it's pretty clear how much I love Tilly, because for the first time ever in Star Trek, I felt like I was physically and emotionally represented in Trek.
Mm.
And that was a really big change for me, because before that, really the only other person that I identified with and also absolutely hated the on-screen treatment of was Reg Barkley, because I am awkward, prone to avoiding people, smarter than you think I am, except when I open my mouth, not everything comes out the way it's supposed to. And yeah, also prone to fantasy.
Homosexual ones?
No.
No?
Yes, and no, but not all. Not everything's about sex. But yeah, it's... And that was why it was so hard for me. It's like, here is somebody that I really identify with, that I feel I'm like, and the way that the crew treat him is just not great. Yeah. So, and that kind of is the way that Sylvia Tilly starts out as well. She does not like to be called Sylvia, which you actually find out not only a little bit on screen, but from Una McCormick's wonderful book, The Way to the Stars. A book I read in a day because I literally could not put it down.
Yeah.
I was like reading it while eating.
I still have to read that.
Reading it while I was in the tub. And so go ahead, Liam. What was your first thought about Tilly?
I didn't really know what to think about Tilly the first time round because she was so different to anything else that we've seen, I feel, in Star Trek, which is refreshing. She was very like, whoa, and sort of like out there and really cool. I loved the character from the outset. Well, maybe not the outset, like I said, maybe like from episode 4. Episode 3, I'm a bit like, what's happening? But I thought she was a really good addition to the show because if you look at it, and I don't want to just... Obviously, she's got a hell of a lot more to her character, but you look at all the main cast, there is not one slightly larger female character. Mm. You've got Uhura, you've got Kira, you got Dax, both Daxes, B'Elanna, T'Pol, they're all very thin ladies, I guess. And then you've got Tilly, who's just representative of, you know, everyone.
Real people.
Real people, yes. Yeah. Well, I'm not saying that people like Roxanne Dawson and all that aren't real, but...
No, but I mean, the thing is, if you were to take... Yeah, if you were to take a large sampling of the female population, you would find far fewer people who looked like Roxanne Dawson and far more who looked like Tilly.
Correct.
So.
And I love her hair.
Oh, her hair is magnificent.
It is.
Glorious.
And I love her personality. And I know that she can be quite a polarizing character, I feel. There's a lot of people that don't like her, which... I can understand but it's not a view that I share.
Yeah. And, well, the thing is that from the minute she opened her mouth, like the first time we meet her, when she comes in and finds Michael there in her quarters, and she knows that Michael's been assigned there temporarily, and she just starts word vomiting.
Yeah.
And... that's what I do when I'm nervous. I just word vomit all over everything and everyone.
Like a roommate is like an inbuilt best friend kind of thing.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. And not only that, just, you know, like all of her things. I actually have to sleep in this bed because of this and this. And just all these things. Too much information.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, that is Tilly.
Too many words.
Me.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. That's me. That is me. And so I'm looking at this woman with her amazing hair. I was born a redhead. You can't tell that now because all the color is gone from my hair except for like silver and dishwater.
Dishwater? Okay.
Well, you know what the color of dirty dishwater is? You know, that's kind of what I've got going on here. That's what it looks like with the stuff going gray.
Oh, okay.
So.
Cool.
Yeah, which is fine. It's a process, and I don't regret growing out the real color.
When you say characters that you identify with, and like you very, very, very strongly identify with Tilly, I still don't have a character in all of Star Trek that I fully identify with, but I identify with lots of little bits of characters. Mm-hmm. So obviously, I mean... there is Culber and Stamets, but I don't like the Stamets character. Sorry. But there's a...
Maybe because he's a little bit too close to home?
Do you think so, though?
Sometimes.
Mm. You
have some very Stamets characteristics, sweetie.
Maybe I identify with Stamets without realizing it, then. but there are parts of Tilly's character and backstory that I do associate myself with, which I'm sure we'll go into at some point during this episode.
Oh, we absolutely will.
But like, if you look through the other series, I identify with little bits of Seven of Nine and little bits of the Vulcan. What's the word I want to look for here? The Vulcan. The stereotypical Vulcan character.
Yeah, I get that. There, I can be very Vulcan. That's my self-defense mode. Mm. If I am locked down and showing no emotion and acting like things don't matter, something is really super wrong. Like, really super wrong. Like, at a core level, life-threatening super wrong.
Oh, really? Yeah. Well, yeah, that would make sense.
Yeah.
I think with me, for Vulcans, it's not necessarily the emotion thing, because I do have emotions, obviously. Like, I'm...
Well, so do Vulcans.
Well, I'm not very good at hiding my emotions, is probably what I mean there. But...
Neither are Vulcans.
I like
sometimes
to be very methodical and planned. Mm-hmm. And if I'm not, that's where I'm like... So
I like a plan.
Oh, I need to be very planned.
Yeah, but the socially awkward thing with Tilly, the babbling and the loving feelings, that's me.
That is it. There is so much Tilly in you. Well, you in Tilly.
That's me.
Maybe Tilly is a descendant of you.
Well, my mother's maiden name is Tilly, so...
Oh, there we go. She is related. She is you. She is your great-great-great-granddaughter.
Okay. I don't know how that would work because I can't have children, but okay.
Yes, I'm trying to dig myself out of this hole now.
Actually, my DNA has been frozen for research purposes because I have polycystic ovary syndrome.
Mm-hmm.
And I was asked if I would be willing to donate blood and DNA to be frozen for research in the future, because there's still so little information about what causes it, why it happens. It is hereditary most of the time. And it will often skip a generation.
Okay.
So, it's something for which there is no cure, and it causes all of these weird side effects that seem to be completely unconnected. I don't even know how they figured this out to begin with. So it's possible that in the future...
I have just worked it out. Your DNA is no longer frozen. Your DNA was turned into a human augment, and there are human augments running around, and that she is a direct descendant of your human augment, which is your DNA.
I'll take it.
Done. There we go.
Perfect. Perfect. Love it.
What a win.
Yes. I feel so much better about life now.
Yep.
Thank you.
I just...
This is why I love podcasts with you, Liam. You change my life every time.
And I like podcasting with you because you change my life too. I don't know. I just love you.
Because I'm a goofball. Because
you're
why.
A goofball. That is exactly right. And then we can goof all over 7 seasons of Deep Space Nine.
Oh, and we will. We learn a lot about Tilly throughout seasons 1 and 2. I think 2, we learn even more,
yes.
Really.
Yeah.
We really get more into her character, and she is the feature of a few episodes as well, which I appreciate. And I just identify so hard with her past so much. So I'm not nearly as smart. I could not be an engineer. So I'm not that we do not have that in common. But as far as the way she felt at school, the way she felt about herself, etc., comes from a place of being bullied. And it isn't necessarily just outside bullying. She was bullied by her mother, her own mother. And that has an effect on a person where you have no safe quarter, that no matter where you go, there's someone ready to attack you. And that, I know what that feels like.
I can't say I know at all anything about what that feels like, because, I mean, my parents, I mean, other than a couple of other things, like what my dad used to say about, I guess, gay people before he realized and was educated on things, he was very bad about it. But in terms of being bullied specifically for things that they know about, I can't compare myself to that. But what I mean, what kind of things, how do you relate to that aspect?
Well, when I was, I guess it was probably when I was about 5 years old and I actually had to start school, that was when I realized that there was no safe place for me. I already wasn't treated well at church by the other kids. They avoided me, didn't talk to me, made fun of me. So I already had that. And then when I started going to school, it was same song, second verse, a little bit louder, a little bit worse. And at home, my older sister really just loved to bully me.
How much older is she?
She's 3 years older than I am. And she's never going to hear this podcast. So so I can talk freely about, you know, there was not just verbal abuse. There was also physical abuse. And there was physical abuse from my grandmother as well, who had, unfortunately, a lot of control over our lives because she was a control freak. So I think that's where the where Tilly's mom gets it from is my grandmother, because that was my mother's mother. So she was a Tilly. She was a Tilly by marriage.
Okay.
Yeah. But so there was no safe place. Not home, not church, not school.
Wow.
Everywhere. I just had to be ready for something to happen.
That's terrible. And no wonder you feel very strongly towards Tilly, especially with the relationship that we see her have with her mother in, I can't remember the episode name. Was it Runaway? Was it in the short track that we saw her mother?
There's part of it in Runaway. There's also when Tilly is recording the message to her mother in Such Sweet Sorrow Part 1.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
She's very diplomatic about it, considering she's had diplomatic training. Mm. Because it's expected, you know, she was pushed into a lot of things that didn't really interest her at all, which is, again, a reference to non-canon material. However, you know, again, they make a very sly reference to this book in canon. So.
They do.
I don't know. I'm going to just say that this is a companion thing. Yes, it may not be considered canon, but it's referenced on screen.
Oh, and there's many times that the books are referenced across all of the series, in a way.
Yes.
Probably more so than most recent series, because there's a lot of books to go back on compared to beforehand.
Yeah. Desperate Hours, though, that became just a complete conflict to
everything
that happened in season two.
I actually really enjoyed Desperate Hours as a book.
I did as well.
That was kind of like a cool...
I enjoyed it very much.
Like, did you ever watch The Crystal Maze? Did you get The Crystal Maze there? I think it was a UK show. Mm. It's like a show where they've got to go through into all these like challenges to get to like the end of it. And that sort of show just reminded me of The Crystal Maze. That book, sorry, reminded me of The Crystal Maze.
Yeah, I can understand how that would be. So, but yeah, I'm just like, all this is made irrelevant by season two of Discovery.
Exactly.
Dang it.
But
dang it. If I had known then what I knew now, I could have been picturing Ethan Peck that entire time. But anyway.
Yeah, I was picturing Zachary Quinto when I was reading it, because that's kind of my Spock. Boy, Ethan Peck is now my Spock, but...
Yeah, I was picturing a young Leonard Nimoy. That's what I was doing at the time.
Fair enough.
The original flavor.
Mm. So I guess the thing you're talking about school, the thing that I identify most with Tilly is that she states that she never really had any friends at school. Now,
same.
That's when she was 14. I had a lot of issue in what I would call primary school. So from the ages of like maybe 8 to 11, probably, where all of my friends were the dinner ladies. I had zero people that I used to speak to. Mm-hmm. And the majority of my time I would spend going and picking up leaves in autumn and then pressing them, you know, like those flower press things.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
That's what I would spend my time doing. I would not be talking to anyone. I had no people that I went and played with. And then when I did, it was sort of like, And then you go to high school and then I think I went through, I don't know, if I call it now depression because I feel like that's what it was, but I don't really know. Like, school started in September in the UK, and I think it might do in America. Here it doesn't because, you know.
August, September.
Yeah, we start in January, but when I was in the UK, we started in September. Come after Christmas, I couldn't go to school. Like, every time I would walk and get my bag or my shoes, I would feel physically sick and throw up. And I would either that or I would break down in tears and just couldn't really bring myself to going. And I spent like a month off of school just because I physically couldn't do it. And Mum didn't know. Mum's just like, well, I don't understand what's wrong. Do you want to talk about it? And I'm like, I don't even know what it is. Sometimes I'm fine. Sometimes I'm not. And most of that was just because I had no one at school to talk to. I just didn't feel safe enough, whereas I felt safe at home probably. And I still can't place my finger on it now. But that was also the time where I guess I was sort of figuring out myself as well.
Mm-hmm.
And working out that maybe boys are the thing that I like. And I mean, yes, they definitely are the thing that I like, even though I did have a thing for Seven of Nine when I was 10 or 11, but that's a different matter. But
hey, sexuality can be fluid.
Oh, well, yes, it can do. But yeah, I don't know. And that's where I feel like Tilly might have had that sort of feeling when she had no friends or anything like that.
Mm-hmm. It sounds to me like anxiety.
Possibly.
Because I have an anxiety disorder. Big surprise.
You have a lot, don't you?
And I have issues. I have issues. Lot of issues. Don't even get me started on the overbite that grew in when my front teeth fell out.
Oh, you had an overbite as well?
A huge
Mine was a
one.
Centimeter. I had a centimeter overbite and my bottom teeth used to munch into the gums behind my top teeth.
Ow.
So I'd constantly have like swollen gums behind my top teeth.
Eesh.
Yeah, and I could fit a £1 coin between my front teeth as well.
Yeah.
I don't know how to relate that to American money, but.
No, we get it. My two front teeth came in at such an angle sticking out that I could bite into a sandwich and I'd get the bread, but the meat would be still in the middle. I couldn't bite through to the meat. I couldn't eat corn on the cob at all.
Oh, my God. So, you've ended up having braces as well?
For 5 years.
Yeah, I had mine.
And a headgear.
You had headgear.
I had a headgear.
Oh, no.
Every once in a while, I still have a nightmare about it. And I had a sadist for an orthodontist as well.
I think any orthodontist is a sadist. Sorry, listeners, but anyone who wants to work on teeth, I'm terrified of you.
Yes, I agree. I'm not even going to tell the story about our childhood dentist because it would horrify you.
Please.
And make your teeth
Please
hurt.
Please don't.
Yeah, I won't.
After my braces came off, I had a retainer for a year that was basically covered the whole roof of my mouth. So it sounded like I was talking with something in my mouth the whole time. So then I just stopped wearing that. And then it screwed my teeth up more, but I don't have my overbite anymore. So that's, you know, good.
Anyway, thank you for listening to the Orthodontist Podcast.
We could
go on forever talking about our childhood horrors, couldn't we?
We really could. Yes.
Yep. Yep.
But then Tilly seems to get out of it, and she does some other weird things at high school, doesn't she? Which is mostly referenced in the book.
Yes, she does. In The Way to the Stars, you know, Tilly's mother, Chauvin, is trying to force her into being a diplomat like her. And Stilly, I was going to call her Stilly because that was the nickname that May Ahern gave her because it was S. Tilly. And so she would just call her Tilly or Silly Tilly, and it became Stilly. So she had no interest in being a diplomat. She was interested in science and engineering, and that was what she wanted to pursue. But her mother was not having any of that, wasn't listening, and she was planning Tilly's future for her.
Yeah, which is unacceptable. And
yeah, it's not okay, especially for a 16-year-old girl. Mm-hmm. You don't do that. You know, that's at the point where someone can start to choose for themselves, or should have been choosing for themselves for at least a year. So, you know, she'd never encouraged Tilly's interests. And so Tilly basically was just doing all of these things that she really didn't enjoy, but yet still trying to do her absolute best.
Yeah.
And
well, that's to try and please there comes a mother, a breaking. Isn't it? That's to try and
it is,
please
but
the
it
family.
Isn't. Yeah, but she's not really given a choice.
No,
but she's the kind of person that she's not doing it because she wants to please her mother as much as she's doing it. So her mother will leave her alone, I guess.
Yeah, that's a better way of putting it. That's kind of how I was thinking it. Yeah.
Yeah. So she ends up having to do this presentation for school, and everybody has to do it and pick a culture and, you know, an alien culture and do a sort of performance. And she works really hard on hers and just does everything exactly right. And the performance itself goes horribly, horribly wrong.
Oh, no.
And everybody laughs at her, which is the most horrifying thing that anyone can have happen, is having your peers laughing at you when you haven't done something funny and mm-hmm. you were just trying to do your best. And that's when she decides, this is not for me. I'm not doing anything that I like, and I got to get out of here. And so she hacks into the tracking system because she's at a special school for diplomats' children. She hacks into the tracking system and basically programs her tracker to simulate where she is at all different times of the day. And she sneaks out under cover of night. And of course, without the tracker on her, no alarms go off. And she just slips right out and heads for the nearest spaceport. And this is a problem because, you know, for everyone else in this situation, because she's the daughter of a very prominent diplomat, and she's hot property for people who want to target said diplomat or, you know, kidnap. It's all of these things, you know, that's why there's such high security and why all of these kids have trackers. And she ends up just getting on the first spaceship she can. The very first night, she ends up having her bag stolen. And so she has no identification, no extra clothes, nothing except what she's wearing and carrying on her person. And she's a little bit freaked out at first, but then she's like, I can handle this. I'm smart enough. She starts doing some repair work on the ship that she's on, because the engineer can't take care of everything herself. And yeah, when they figure out she's kind of like a stowaway, they're just like, okay, we're taking you to the authorities. And the engineer's like, well, you know what? I mean, we really could use some things done around here. And so she learns more from the engineer. And when she gets to the first place that they're going to, she, you know, has formed relationships. And they're like, okay, we're going to put you in touch with these people, and they'll help you find a place to stay and help you get a job and all these things. And she's functioning in the real world simply by her own grit and ability and knowledge. And she's succeeding.
At 16.
At 16. Completely on her own. That is the power of Tilly. She gets it done.
Well, she gets it done, and that's her skill. That's what she wants to do, really, isn't it? She wants the science, she wants the engineering, and she knows how to do all of that stuff. But she's also probably got that diplomatic training underneath her to know when and where she needs to be and how to talk to get what she wants done.
She does, but it doesn't necessarily always come out the right way.
Oh, of course not. No, and that's Tilly.
Of her anxiety.
Yeah, and that's Tilly.
Yeah, social awkwardness and anxiety, but nobody knows who she is out there.
Mm.
Nobody knew who she was on the ship. Actually, turns out they did know who she was, but they didn't say anything. Nobody knows who she is on this planet. Zimhi, I want to say it is. And people are just taking her for at face value at what she can do. And she makes herself useful. And she figures out, oh, this is what the world can really be like. Unfortunately, she does get caught up with. Her grandmother finds her. And yeah, she had been trying to live with her grandmother as much as she could because living with her mother was absolutely intolerable. And grandma had not really stood up for Tilly as far as the bullying from Shoban. And so after this particular situation, grandma had had enough and she tells Shoban, okay, you're going to shut up and listen for once.
which needs to be done.
Yes. And, oh, that mother, that was like my grandmother. Shoban was so much like my grandmother. It just, that emotionally hit me when I was reading this book.
There's a lot of scenarios in real life where the grandparents are the ones that end up looking after the grandchildren more so because the parents are just incapable or downright nasty. And I'm guessing that's pretty much the case with this because I'm going to confess I haven't read the book yet and I really, really want to because you're really selling it to me right now. But I have a feeling that that's a similar case to what Siobhan is like.
Yeah, it's just, it's hard. It hurts my heart. Because I know what it feels like. And Una McCormick is so good at tapping into the essence of Tilly that I totally believed everything. You know, she just wrote her perfectly. Mm. I absolutely believed that this was the story of a 16-year-old Tilly. So, and it, actually, I was just leafing through it, checking, you know, looking at different things in reference to what we were going to talk about today. And I just found myself reading a couple of chapters. That is the power of Una McCormick.
She is an amazing writer.
She really is, and an amazing human.
That might also explain the affinity and the care that she has for Mahani Ikahali Kapo in Runaway. Like,
yes,
Stowaway.
Exactly.
You know, that just explains how she's like, oh, no, I understand what you need to be quiet, etc., because she's been through that herself.
Mm-hmm.
And let's face it, because the whole Runaway thing from the school who was referenced slightly in season 2 of Discovery, That whole stuff is basically canon when you think about it. Like, you can pretty much add it in.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely can. And I do. It's such a well-crafted story, in my opinion, that it just fits in with everything we've already seen on screen. And just enriches the character.
Yeah, exactly. She's such a great character. Love that hair
ball. So brilliant. Mm-hmm. I love it when it's just all down. Just all down, being free.
Such a frizz ball.
Amazing. I know. It's if as someone who now has naturally curly hair, wasn't born with it, but have it now. Why? Couldn't tell you. Just happened one day.
Did you have too many perms?
I know. No. I actually...
I can imagine you with a perm.
I hated perms.
I can imagine you
frankly.
With one, though.
Yeah, but the... The thing is that it was never like that. Like, I'd had a perm a few times, but I never let it dry naturally. You know, it was just there to help hold curl because my hair was straight like a stick. And then somewhere in my 40s, my hair just said, surprise, you're going to have it be naturally curly now. Sucks to be you. So now when I brush it out, it's just...
Afro Brandy.
Huge. Yep. Just a frizzy fro. There we go. There's the title.
Something that's actually not my story, but it's Jordan, my partner's story, that I thought was very, very similar in terms of the what Tilly was able to do with her tracker. Jordan at his school worked out how to hack into all the printers across the school and then kept printing things across the whole school, and it took them a month to track down who it was. That was when he was 16.
What was he printing, for heaven's sake?
Oh, just silly things. Like, he didn't do anything bad. He wasn't printing anything about people or anything like that. It was sort of just jokes and just random little things like pictures of memes and that kind of stuff that he would just send out.
Yep. Okay, so in season one of Discovery, Tilly forms an even closer relationship with Stamets, your not favorite character. And when he's suddenly really kind of, I don't know how to explain what happened to him, when he just, you know, his eyes turn white and he's just kind of not all there, like partially still in
high on tardigrade juice.
Thank you. High on tardigrade juice. And just kind of existing in multiple dimensions at the same time because of all of his spore drive jumps. And, you know, basically Tilly's like, I'm the only person here who is qualified to treat him, to understand what he is going through. Because, you know, they're kind of just trying to push her off. And she's like, no, I'm the person that you need. And she watches over him and takes care of him until, you know, from the time that he starts manifesting these symptoms until they're back from the mirror universe. Mm. And he's, you know, returning somewhat to normal.
Well, that speaks to her empathy and that, which again is something that is very, very Brandy.
Fortunately or unfortunately, depending on who you ask.
Well, yeah. But as you say, like, she's got a lot of care and compassion and empathy and smarts and just a well-rounded, decent human.
She is very decent. And she, I think it was, I know it was Stamets who said this, and I'm trying to think of the exact wording that he used. I think it was something to the effect of, everything that you do comes from a place of love, and that's why you're going to make an amazing captain.
Yeah, and that kind of, that is the exact reason why she's going to, she's not going to smash the command training program now because she's, you know, 900 years in the future.
Well,
but, you know.
Well, see, hey, there's still command training programs in the future, is there not?
Well, there's barely a federation.
Barely, but hey, they're going to fix that, right?
Mm-hmm.
So.
Somehow.
I'm guessing.
I am looking forward to that.
They're gonna fix it.
About bloody time we got Deep Space. No, about bloody time we got Discovery Season 3.
I'm super stupid excited.
Mm.
So, I try not to think about it on a daily basis, but I do.
Yeah, that's just because we're nerds, isn't it?
Yeah, and I love being a nerd. I love that being a nerd is actually somewhat acceptable now, because when I was a kid, nerds were all the bully targets.
Oh, yeah, exactly. Even when I was a kid, nerds were bully targets.
Yeah. So, yeah, the what I did when I was a kid is I spent my time not playing with friends, but playing video games and reading. And in fact, when I was of age to start dating, all of my friends that I did have, my girlfriends, they were always going out on dates on Friday night. There's me on my Nintendo just playing Alien 3.
Yes.
That was my bag. That was my jam.
Yeah.
And I think that has a lot to do with not just the fact that I was awkward, but also that I am an introvert. And constantly being around other people for extended periods of time can be very, very draining. Like when I go to a convention, it takes me like a week to recover from that. Because it just, it's wonderful, but it sucks all the life out of me.
Yeah. Would you say Tilly's an introvert?
I would say that she is an extroverted introvert.
Like on the boundary.
Yeah. That she has extrovert tendencies. But she can also be very single-minded and antisocial,
mm-hmm.
which you get a taste of in The Weight of the Stars as well.
Would that be a more extroverted thing, antisocial?
No, it's antisocial is definitely an introvert thing.
Oh, yeah. Oh, you idiot, Liam. Of course.
No, you're fine. Because the difference, and I've said this before, yeah, probably on this podcast,
probably,
is
I don't remember.
Extroverts recharge their energy by being around lots of people.
Yeah, and then introverts
recharge their energy by being alone.
Their own space.
So, and
when you say she's an extroverted introvert,
I'm sorry.
What was that?
That was my little Brit boy on my watch suddenly deciding he was going to speak up.
Oh, I see.
Because something I said sounded like his activation word. So
activation word.
Activation word. He's been activated.
That's like a safe word, but to get started.
Yeah. So the reason that I say introverted extrovert is because, or extroverted introvert, is because she doesn't always have to be around people. In fact, she is just fine on her own. She doesn't suffer from being alone. She's very smart and capable and can absolutely be alone if she needs to be. And also, she is, many introverts are also socially awkward.
Okay.
So that is another part of it. She also is unwilling to share some of the deepest parts of herself. It takes her a while to really let other people see the core of her, and it's not until about the middle of season two that she really starts to explain to people. Like when she's having that problem with the spore that has grown inside her, and she's admitting to Stamets that she was a weird kid, and that she didn't have a lot of friends, and she was lamenting that she was not as good a friend to May Ahern
as she could have been.
May was to her.
Mm.
So, because she can become very single-minded and
focused,
antisocial, and just want to, she knows what she needs to get done. She's just going to do it and don't get in her way. So, yeah. So she has tendencies of both.
Because she's also very good at a party. And this is where she's exactly like me at a party. She's probably sitting there a little bit socially awkward till she gets a drink in her, and then she's like, yeah, everybody, come in here. I'm like your best friend.
Yeah, well, alcohol does bring out certain tendencies in people. I just become really loud and think everything is fine. The problem is that if you're the sober person around a lot of drunk people, yeah, the drunk people are having fun, but the people around the drunk people are not having fun. It is not fun for them at all.
I'm a lovey drunk.
You're a lovey drunk.
So I'm like very huggy and not, I wouldn't say touchy as in like gross touchy, like, you know, like just this kind of handsy kind of person. Yeah. But I'm just very like, oh, I love you. And then I do kind of find a lot more things funny. And then when I'm high, that's a very different story again.
Well, that's not allowed here, so I can't say anything about that.
Ah, oh, true. Yes. But then we see, like, you say, like, she's a socially awkward person, but she's also mentoring Michael Burnham on how to be social.
Yes, which is funny. But then again, Michael Burnham has no social skills at all. So Tilly is better than nothing. Yeah. Yeah. Well, the thing is that when Tilly starts seeing Josep May, she doesn't trust anyone to tell them what's going on.
Yeah.
She thinks that she's hallucinating. And she also thinks that if she says anything, that she'll get kicked out of the command training program. So it's just something for her to conquer.
Yeah.
And so that's a very introvert thing as well.
Mm-hmm.
Is having those friends, but not knowing for sure if you can actually trust them.
Yeah, like if they are your friends.
And so,
yeah,
just going back into that shell and playing a part so that hopefully nobody notices that anything is wrong.
But it was,
been there.
It was really heartbreaking to see like her really fight it and have trouble with coming to terms with the fact that, oh God, what's happening in my head?
Mm-hmm.
And the Mary Wiseman did an amazing job of that.
She does an amazing job, period, as Tilly always.
Well, I mean, yes, but yeah, I found that really right, believable.
That's brilliant. Yeah.
Now, I've got something that will make you annoyed, and I'm just want to get your thoughts on it, because I know that you have very strong feelings about this. And that is been used a lot as a common thing against the Tilly character, is that they started off so well and made her comedic. Now, I know you don't believe that's a fair statement for the character.
I do not.
And I'd like to know why.
Why? Mm. Everybody has their moments of comedy on the show. There is not one person who is designated the comic relief. Everybody has their part where they have those amusing moments. Saru has had them. Michael has had them. Lorca had them. Pike had them. Even Spock had them. I mean, everybody had those moments. And so putting that all on Tilly, I feel, denigrates the character, because we know Tilly's personality. And yes, sometimes her social awkwardness is amusing. And I find it amusing myself, because I'm like, yeah, I know how that feels. I would have done that same thing. But saying that she's only comic relief is a vast undervaluing of her character.
Yeah. Okay, good. Because these are the kind of things in the original watch through of Discovery Season 1, especially when it came to Will You Take My Hand? Is that the one? Mm-hmm. Where they were on the Orion Outpost, where she was used with that guy who was also in TOS.
Clint Howard.
Howard. Yeah, that one.
Yep.
Though she was just smoking volcano dust or whatever it was that she was smoking. Like, I sort of had that opinion when I was like, really, why do we need to use Tilly for this? Is it because she wants to be the comedic relief character, considering some of the other things that we've seen, like her running across one way and then back? And I kind of felt that they were trying to use her a little bit like that, which I felt myself made a disservice to the character. Do you know what I'm trying to say there?
Yeah.
But I
understand
feel after season two that is not the route that they were taking.
No, it wasn't. And the whole thing with her running one way and then the other, she had just been hit in the head.
True.
So that's something anybody might have done in that situation. And the way that I look at it, yeah, there was that whole scene with Clint Howard as an Orion. That was interesting. It was nice to see him. That was a nice bit of fan service. And the thing is, the Tilly that we see in season two would have reacted to that situation completely differently than the Tilly that we had there, because there hasn't
grown.
Been the growth.
Yeah.
Yeah, there hasn't been the growth yet that would precipitate her reacting differently. She was told, you know, this is a very important thing. You keep a hold of this. You blend in. Don't call attention to yourself. And that is what she was doing.
That's what she learned from her parents, wasn't it? Or from her mother.
Yeah. This guy was starting to make a ruckus because she wasn't going to, you know, smoke the stuff or whatever. And so she complies, because she doesn't want to call attention, and she's the one with the book. So for me, that actually worked for the character, because she was still in that area of uncertainty. She was still a cadet at that time.
Yeah, so she's on the lowest rung, trying to make a name for herself, etc.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, no, okay, that's fine. I'll take that, because it was something that I did think of, and then I thought, oh, maybe not, and it definitely came out and changed the way the character went in season two because of the growth that she went. Now she's an ensign, etc. So I will take that as
headcanon.
Yeah, that'll do. I'll take that as headcanon.
Yeah, that's how I feel about it. Everybody can have their own opinion, you know, because that's the thing. Opinions are as vast and varied as there are stars in the sky.
Yeah.
So, but nobody's ever going to convince me that Tilly is anything less than absolutely amazing.
Yeah, she is. She is a goddess.
One thing that I really appreciated about season two is the whole Jacep storyline, when she gets pulled into the mycelial network and she is, you get to see her super angry. Like, super angry. We've never quite seen her that way. And she's like, and I'm not going to deal with my anger. I'm just going to let it sit and fester.
That's exactly what I like doing.
Yes. And I have been there. It's like, sometimes you do need to let something just sit and fester.
Yeah.
So that you can realize, okay, I need to let this go now. But when I get angry, my first reaction isn't always the right one. So I will sit and let things fester for a while and determine where I really am. But yeah, well, sometimes, and then I'm sorry, go ahead.
Well, sometimes you need to have that anger sit for a while to actually work out, am I actually angry over this or is there something else? You need to work out just exactly mm-hmm. what has bothered you by what has happened.
Exactly. Exactly.
Instead of flying off the handle or from the first instant or accepting it in the first instance, because you don't know your emotions from the outset for something mm-hmm. that can evoke such an emotional response.
Yeah. Yeah. And this whole situation with her, I mean, the minute she's in the mycelial network, her first thought is, how am I going to get back? I need to get back. You better send me back. Mm. And then May explains what's going on. And she's made, you know, appeals to her. You're the only person who can help us. And so she's still really angry, but her next words are, what do you need me to do?
Yeah. Well, because that's a Starfleet
that's
training.
Just the way she is. Well, yeah, it's just, it is Starfleet training, but at the same time, it's just inherently Tilly. Somebody needs help. And I'm the only one who can do it, so I'm going to do it.
Yeah, especially like the...
Even if I'm angry.
The face that she pulls, it's like, oh, I really don't want to find or help kind of thing.
Yeah. My favorite thing is when Discovery half pops in and they go onto the ship and Tilly's like, where is everyone? And May says something to the effect of, maybe they died trying to rescue you. Thanks for that.
It's like, yeah.
Hey, thanks for that. I have used that more than once.
Yes.
Yeah, you don't really get to see the sarcastic Tilly very often. And so I love some of the tendencies that she showed in those episodes. And her character grew even further because of this experience. So, can't say enough good things.
I think it's just quite simply summed up in the fact that she is a very well-rounded, well-written character.
Agree.
And portrayed Absolutely. By someone who knows exactly what she's doing with it as well.
Yes. Yes, she does. Mary Wiseman is amazing, not just as Tilly, but as an actor. She is amazing. Can absolutely make you believe she's anyone. So yeah. I'm so glad that I got to have her for this character, because I can't imagine anyone that could have possibly done the service to the character that she has.
Agreed.
I can't picture anyone else ever having done it. So
agreed.
Well, it has been super fun talking about Frizzy Poofy Froze, but this is not the only thing we've been discussing on the network. So here is a quick listen to some of the other things that you may have missed elsewhere on Trek FM.
Previously on Trek.fm, Literary Treks.
Not wanting to be spoiled about this book, I would suggest then not listening now, read the book, and then come back later, and then you can enjoy the whole freaking feature of this glorious analysis that we're going to give this.
I shot JR. Sorry, I thought we were getting into spoilers. My bad.
I don't know. I just like woke up from a dream. I was in the shower.
Ugh.
The Orb.
But if you think about the fact that Sisko is with the prophets at this time, and Section 31 is going to try to kill the prophets, maybe that's a way for Sisko to re-enter the story and play his role in representing the prophets to overturn what Section 31 is trying to do, and to champion that idea of Truidic, and end the season with that message that religion is fine for those who want to believe it, and it's also fine for you not to believe it.
Earl Grey.
One of my notes I made on this episode is that Riker is a cosplayer. He likes to put on the native costumes of the planets he goes to.
Yes.
Ewan, I have started making a Riker Angel 1 cosplay. Ewan wants it for SLB.
So. Nice.
Yes! That was one of my notes as well, was Riker's left nipple.
Doesn't leave much to the imagination, but yeah.
To the journey!
Quick snap poll. Suzanne, would you prefer Neelix to cook for you or Chell?
Chell.
Chell? Zach, Neelix or Chell?
Neelix.
Oh.
Oh. I see Leola root in your future. Lots of it.
Oh, yeah. Give me those exotic ingredients. Yes.
Chell is my man.
I mean, you can have... with Chell, you can get, like, all those pun food items that he made.
Exactly. It would be like Bob's Burgers in space.
Wow.
And that's what else is happening on Trek.fm.
Check out all these shows and join the conversation about your favorite corner of the Star Trek universe and beyond. You will find us wherever you get your podcasts. If you're an Apple user, be sure to hit the subscribe button in Apple Podcasts on iPhone, iPad, or Apple TV, or the Desktop Podcasts app to get the latest episodes as soon as they're published. And please leave us a star rating and written review. It helps us find more listeners. Brandy, we have two reviews.
Do we?
Yes, and they're nice ones.
Oh, I love nice reviews.
Oh, I know. It's a very, very rare thing for us to get. So,
unfortunately.
The first review is from someone called BWDESMO. It might be Buodesmo. I don't know how to pronounce it. From the US, and they say, "Damn it, you guys and your homosexual fantasies and the grading and the terrible yeah and no. I find myself endlessly entertained by you and your nonsense. Don't let the blizzards shut you down." Smiley face. Thank you.
Yes, thank you.
I'm glad what one person's issues with us make other people happy.
Well, that's really the way it is. It's all about personal taste.
Yeah, exactly. And hope you follow us over onto the Vedic Assembly.
Yes, please do that.
Mm-hmm. I wonder what homosexual fantasies I can do there. We do get to see shirtless Vedic Barile.
You know, I always thought he was creepy, frankly.
Well, I mean,
so
yeah.
He does nothing for me.
Yeah, true. All right. And then...
Sorry.
Our other one is... this other one. Okay. This other one is by someone called Number One Loyal Baby Bee, who is in the Australian iTunes store.
Oh, boy.
And it says, "I love this show. Liam is my favorite. He's hilarious. And four crying with laughter faces. This person is my best friend, and we were drunk on Friday night, and she's like, I'm going to review your podcast." So that's what she did.
That's fantastic.
So, I mean, it's a review nonetheless. So, yeah.
It is. Mm-hmm. It's there for time and all eternity.
Yep. So, Sophie, thank you. I mean, I'm sure you don't actually even listen to the show. In fact, I know you don't listen to the show because you think Star Trek is boring.
She hasn't watched Star Trek very much, has she?
No. She did watch parts of an episode of Voyager, and she was like, there's no, like, fun in this. It's like no funny or fun. It's all talking. And I'm like, yeah, the episode you watched was a bit bland for that kind of thing. But, you know, it's all over the place. But anyway, yeah, so that wasn't probably the most legitimate review. But whatevs. We'll take what we can get.
Well, hey. Yeah. It's there. It's there. And we're just going to go with it. Mm-hmm. So... But hey, speaking of Apple users, if you're not one, then we still got your back. You can find our shows on Google Podcasts, Stitcher, TuneIn, Spreaker, SoundCloud, YouTube, in most third-party apps, and you can stream and download the MP3 file from our website or grab that RSS link. Now, we would love to hear your thoughts on today's show, and there are many ways for you to do that. The best place to join in the larger conversation is the Babel Conference, the listeners group on Facebook. Just type Babel, B-A-B-E-L, into the search field on Facebook, and it should come right up.
If you'd like to send us an email, you can use the form on our website at trek.fm/contact. Choose to send to a show and select the edge. That will go to Brandy. You can also find the network on Twitter at TrekFM and on Facebook at facebook.com/TrekFM. So, Brandy, when you're not trying to track Tilly down with her tracker, where can people find you on the interwebs?
Oh, no, I already hacked into that tracker, man.
Ooh.
She's mine. You can find me on Twitter at BrandyWine12. Brandy's with an I. 12 is a number. You can find me on the Dark Corner podcast with my husband, Dave, where we talk about stuff and things from a darker perspective because we're gothy people. I also do a solo podcast called Headcanon that I just talk about the ramblings that come through my brain. And it involves...
talk about head and cannons.
Head and cannon. Heads and cannons.
Cannons with heads. Heads firing out cannons. There we go.
Yes, there you go. There you go. That's it right there. And there are a lot of tangents. And so come take a walk through my brain and my fandoms. It's a lot of fun. You can find both the Dark Corner Podcast and Head Cannon at darkcornerpodcast.com or wherever you find other podcasts and stuff like that. And also the Vedic Assembly over at We Made Treks. Come on over. Come on over. So Liam, when you're not busy planning every second of your life down to the smallest detail, where can people find you?
I don't know. I didn't plan this segment. You can find me on Twitter at LS74656. You can find me on this network, Onto the Journey, for a little while longer, not very much longer, because you can find me on We Made Treks Network with the Vedic Assembly and maybe somewhere else. I don't know whether I need to say this right now. When does this come out? This comes out after TTJ. Yes, so you can find me on the new Voyager podcast with Suzanne on We Made Treks, which is called The Jane Way. There's a little play on The Right Way, The Wrong Way, and then The Jane Way.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Excellent.
We would like to give a shout out to our wonderful Frizzy Frode associate producers, Norman C. Lau, Tony Robinson, Thomas Vallejo, Lisa Slack, Shoaib Mirza, Richard Rutledge, James Muldrow, Cornelia Reutner, Ryan Mallett, and Chris Tribuzio. Thank you for supporting The Edge and Trek FM via Patreon. If you'd like to become an associate producer of The Edge or one of the other shows on Trek FM, please visit patreon.com/trekfm. That is patreon.com/trekfm.
Thank you very much for listening, and join us next time, probably, maybe, to see what's happening on The Edge of Federation Space. Yeah, but I would rather be cold than hot, because when I'm cold, I don't sweat.
Ah, true.
And I don't get all flushed.
All right, sweaty Brandy, where are we going to next?
Sweaty.